This month's featured nutrient at drhoffman.com, EGCG Ultra, bringing you the benefits of green tea in a concentrated form. For all your supplement needs, shop our store at drhoffman.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's that time of week again. It is time for Q&A with Layla, which is, for many of you, your favorite podcast. We interview guests of great distinction every week here on Intelligent Medicine, but our guest who seems to enjoy much of the distinction with you is Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. She is a registered dietitian. She also holds a master's degree in the field of nutrition, and she works with me on a daily basis helping patients at the Hoffman Center. And each week we field your questions. You can get questions to us via radio program at AOL.com. Just email us your questions. Make them brief, make them succinct, make them of general interest to our audience, and we will select your question, if it's appropriate, and field it on the air. How you doing, Layla?
Okay. How are you doing, Dr. Hoffman?
Good. I'm catching up with some reading on the stories of the week. And before we get to the questions, actually, this is posed to me as a question on Facebook. You know, I've got a Facebook page for it's at Dr. Ronald Hoffman on Facebook. Like it if you want to get updates, because I post a lot of updates there. And we got a question. People sometimes weigh in with questions. And some people were upset by a recent study that suggests that vitamin E-rich oils are linked to lung inflammation. And you saw that story too, Layla.
Yeah.
So what the story is basically saying, this is what the story is implying, is that, you know, we have different types of vitamin E, and we know that actually there are eight different types of what's broadly called vitamin E. Some are the tocopherols, and some are the different vitamin E isoforms. Everybody knows that.
Tocotrienols, yeah.
The tocotrienols, there are four different tocotrienols, and there are four different vitamin E's. And the most important ones are alpha tocopherol and gamma tocopherol. And there has been a lot of buzz about alpha tocopherol being a less efficient form of vitamin E than gamma tocopherol. Gamma tocopherol is supposed to be really good for you. But this article suggests that gamma tocopherol actually produces lung inflammation. Let me just see what they're saying here. Gamma tocopherol is the most common form of vitamin E found in the American diet due to high intakes of canola, soybean, and corn oil.
Mm-hmm.
And olive oil, wheat germ oil, almond, and sunflower oil are all sources of alpha tocopherol. And what they're saying here is they looked at levels of alpha tocopherol and gamma tocopherol, and they found that high gamma tocopherol levels were associated with a 10 to 17% reduction in lung function. And are they saying, boy, there's an interesting supposition here. They're saying, could the rise in asthma cases over the last 40 years correspond with our mission for a healthier lifestyle and heart by cutting down on lard and butter and switching to healthier soybean, canola, and corn oils? I kind of agree with that statement, actually, but it's not, the problem is not the gamma tocopherol in those oils.
No, it's the omega-6.
Right. So what's your take?
In many of those oils.
So often Layla and I, you know, sit down in the office and I bring something in and we say, take a look at this. What do you think? You know, and, you know, usually, you know, with 15 minutes, a half an hour or an hour of background research, we can come up with an interpretation that most of these health journalists, it eludes them because they don't have the background. They don't have the time because they're always trying to hit a deadline with a lurid story. And So what's your interpretation?
Well, what they should do is really substitute the word gamma tocopherol for soybean oil, which is abundant in the American diet, canola oil, which is not that much, which is a little better than soybean oil. But the main constituent here that all these oils have in common is that they're high in omega-6 fats, which we know in our standard American diet that we have a very high ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. So irrespective of the amount of gamma tocopherol, it's more about the pro-inflammatory nature
yes.
of these omega-6 oils.
So this is really
my take on it.
That was exactly my take on it, you know, mm-hmm. and I didn't share my take on it with you. We independently arrived at the same take. But the presence of higher levels
great
of...
Great minds think alike.
Thank you. I would like to think so. I would like to think so. But my interpretation of this is that the higher level of gamma tocopherol seen in the individuals in this study was a marker and a concomitant of their high consumption of poor quality omega-6 oils.
Yes.
And that it's not the, you know, it's senseless to blame it on gamma tocopherol. It's about the oils, and we know that omega-6 oils are pro-inflammatory, and there's an association between alpha tocopherol and olive oil. Well, we know that olive oil has benefits beyond just the monounsaturated fat
and the
vitamin E content. It actually has beneficial polyphenols, which are
yes.
maybe anti-inflammatory, and that might affect
the omega-9, the omega-9 class of fats, which are also important.
The monounsaturated fats, mm-hmm. sure, which may be membrane stabilizing, and a fair amount of omega. There is a little bit of omega-3 in olive oil, not much, but there is some. And so, I'm thinking that they missed the point in this study.
They did. They sorely missed the point. And, you know, the methods are questionable about the spirometry was obtained at year 0, 5, 10, and 20.
Right.
And then they looked at serum tocopherols at year 0, 7, and 15. What are we really getting from this information? This is not a randomized controlled, you know, clinical trial or anything like that.
It's correlation, not causation,
yes.
clearly. I mean, it'd be
yes.
one thing if they said, well, let's feed, rich gamma tocopherol, rich vitamin E to a group of patients with lung disease, and alternatively, we'll give them either a placebo or we'll give them alpha tocopherol, mm-hmm. good old-fashioned alpha tocopherol, and we'll see if there's a difference. And I would suspect that there's going to be a protective effect because vitamin E is a premier antioxidant and might
yes.
have a beneficial effect on the lungs. By the way, there was just a study. There were just two studies that came in. One was a disappointing study on N-acetylcysteine for a condition called primary pulmonary fibrosis or idiopathic mm-hmm. pulmonary fibrosis, which is a terrible lung disease. Actually, my father passed away from that disease.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a disease. It's kind of the opposite of COPD, where the lungs swell. The lungs contract and become very stiff. And so they took N-acetylcysteine. They gave it to people 600 milligrams twice daily, and it didn't prevent progression. So it wasn't any good. But that got the headlines, but at the same time, a study just was completed that shows that people with COPD, which is probably 20 times more common than primary pulmonary or idiopathic pulmonary fibrosis, that 600 milligrams of N-acetylcysteine, or NAC, actually slowed the progression towards lung failure in patients with that type of lung disease. So,
mm-hmm.
you know,
wow.
So there's some things that are protective. But let's go back to the vitamin E story. As soon as I sent you this article, you know, we're back and forth on, sending each other email. You came across some studies that were very supportive of the use of gamma tocopherol. So what are some of the, how do you decide whether you take an alpha tocopherol or you take a mixed tocopherol that's rich in gamma tocopherol, or should we stop? That's, some of our more wonky patients are saying, oh my God, it's going to screw up my lungs.
Oh, no. The mixed tocopherols are absolutely the way to go. The emphasis on gamma tocopherol is still, there's a lot of research that indicates that it's anti-inflammatory, it's great for reducing cardiovascular risk factors, and, it's also found primarily in nuts, seeds, the vegetable oils that we mentioned, but the way to get our fats is through our nuts and seeds and through our grass-fed meat, our good, sustainable seafood, and all of that. And again, the emphasis should be not to concentrate on just the alpha tocopherol because we know the dangers of that.
Right.
So the other thing
actually, there have been some disappointing studies that just look mm-hmm. at pure alpha tocopherol, which is not the way that you find vitamin E in nature. When you eat nuts or avocados that are rich in the vitamin E complex, because there are really eight different compounds under the rubric of vitamin E, mm-hmm. four tocopherols and four tocotrienols. This is sort of like, you know, beta carotene versus mixed carotenoids that you find in fresh fruits and vegetables.
Right.
So
right.
Clearly, the notion is we want patients to take mixed tocopherols and rich
in quench all the free radicals, the oxidative stress that's all involved in inflammation in our chronic diseases, cardiovascular, cancer, smoking, all of that. So
right.
There's plenty of research that shows the benefits of gamma tocopherol. And it's also the major form of vitamin E in plant seeds. So,
right.
You know,
so,
your pumpkin seeds, sunflower seeds, your nuts, all of that.
So we're second-guessing nature because we're saying, oh, you know, that gamma tocopherol that's the most prevalent form in its natural form, that's mm-hmm. bad for you, so we should, the take-home message, we should take artificial, just plain unidimensional alpha tocopherol. I don't think that that's a good take-home message.
Not at all. This study, unfortunately, is very, very, very flawed. Yeah, this is how. This is where our tax dollars are going if they got grants from NIH for any of this at all. But yeah, it's unfortunate. It's analogous to saying, let's see, pretend that they started putting vitamins in Coca-Cola.
Okay.
Well, the gamma tocopherol. Okay, is not provide. Guess what? You had lower lung function on spirometry and blah blah blah. But the source was Coca-Cola.
Right.
Well, there's a confounder right there.
Exactly.
It's the same thing with the soybean oil and the other vegetable oils and
which we consume much too much of. And actually, one of the tests that we like to do in patients is called the omega 3-6 index. Which is, so it's not just about taking lots of fish oil. You can take lots of fish oil, that's fine, but you actually, at the same time, you want to reduce your intake of omega-6 oils, which are pro-inflammatory in a variety of ways. And certainly the lungs are a site of inflammation for many people, and that's how we develop lung deterioration. You know, that test, I think, can be very useful in patients who have inflammatory disorders. So I'm not stopping my, by the way, I take 800 international units of vitamin E that's rich in gamma tocopherol. That's the brand we carry at the Hoffman Center. And so far, so good, right?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I just checked my C-reactive protein. I was just curious because, you know, you turn 60 and, you know, it's like, I'm starting to get inflamed. Because as you get older, you tend to get more inflamed. There's just a general progression. And most of our patients past a certain age have a highly sensitive C-reactive protein. And I checked it, and I checked it twice. One was 0.67, and the other one was 0.58.
Excellent.
Which is, you know, that's where we want it to be, around
you
half.
You want it to be under one, yeah.
Certainly under one, you know, and they suggest, in the Jupiter study, they were suggesting if it's over two, you should start taking a statin. Well, I can stay away from statins for the time being.
Well, what's your take on even some of the high sensitivity C-reactive protein being influenced by, say, hay fever? Or tissue injury.
Well, that's this is actually what I thought, because I have, coupled with a couple of aches and pains from like some musculoskeletal injuries. Doing a little too much running, swimming, and biking, and I thought, well, you know, maybe I have arthritis, and no, that they're just muscle injuries. People who really pour down, like right after a marathon. And you check your C-reactive protein, that's probably going to be high because there's really tissue damage. I mean, I'm not working out at the level where I have routine tissue damage. But if you've had a cold, you could see it quite elevated,
So it's a matter of timing, too.
Yeah, sinusitis will do it, or, you know, and certainly allergies. And I've had kind of sneezing a little bit this season. Not too bad. It's been pretty good. So, okay. On to questions, and we want to reserve a little time today for a discussion of natural treatments of acne. So if we have time, we're going to focus on that. That was an article that I actually wrote a couple of weeks ago for the Intelligent Medicine newsletter that we send out to subscribers on a weekly basis. If you haven't subscribed lately, subscribe. Go to drhoffman.com. There's a little box where you can put in your email, and we'll send out newsletter updates on a timely basis. Okay, questions.
Our first question comes from Dennis. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, do you think colloidal silver is effective as a topical on a Q-tip for my son's sinus infection along with olive leaf capsules?
In a word, yes, I think that could be helpful. Mm-hmm. What do we know about colloidal silver? Well, colloidal silver used to be used in the pre-antibiotic era. They used a lot of topical silver. They also used it internally on the mucous membranes. Some people drink it. I'm not so sure that's a great idea, although it is claimed that if you have a correct preparation of colloidal silver, that it won't accumulate in your body.
And you won't turn blue?
Which is a consequence. If you take the wrong, poorly formulated silver, you can turn blue. I actually have seen an individual up close and personal who was, at first I thought he was of the African-American race. But then I saw that, he wasn't black. He was blue, like cobalt blue.
Wow.
And he was a Caucasian individual who was totally enamored with taking oral silver. And this is a known side effect of consuming. They say it doesn't happen with the right preparations, but, I'm a little concerned with a high intake of colloidal silver orally, but topically it's fine. And we have it in three forms. We have a gel that we apply to skin problems. We have a spray that you can spray in the, it's very convenient. If you have a sore throat, you can spray it to the back of your throat. You just, sort of like the way opera singers used to spray a little aerosol to the back of their throat, me, 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 me. And then, in the back of the throat. Oh, here come the ambulances to take me away. They're coming to take me away. This is for our listeners in far-flung parts of the world. This is New York City, folks, and we record. I record this from my office in New York City, and so that's one of the consequences of it being a live show. Okay, so coming back to the theme of silver, then we also have a nasal spray silver. And that is helpful for chronic sinusitis, along with clear Exhaler nasal spray. And we also like olive leaf. That's a good product.
Very good. Very good for the immune system. So absolutely apropos for a sinus infection, certainly.
Yeah, olive leaf, actually the oleoropein in olive leaf was patented by Upjohn, I believe it was the pharmaceutical company, in the 1960s. The substance is calcium D-linolate, and they actually wanted to make this into an antibiotic. They realized that because it's a substance from nature, they might have some problems getting a patent on a designer drug. Usually, if you want to patent something, it's got to be tweaked from nature. It can't be, to patent...
you can't patent nature's pharmacy.
You can't patent curcumin. You can't patent, you could get maybe some sort of use patent, but you can't really... lock it up like a, like Lipitor or, a medication, because that's an artificial thing. So anyway, so they did the research, they left it on the shelves, and then it got picked up probably in the 90s as a new way. When the antibiotics started to fail, we started to look for more ways to treat infections naturally. Mm-hmm. And olive leaf, in addition to being very beneficial from a cardiovascular standpoint, also has the D-linolate, which is a natural antibiotic. So for sinusitis, I tell people to take, 3, 6, 9 a day. Great for acne, too, because it is a natural antibiotic.
Great for acne, yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later in the podcast.
Great for blood pressure.
Indeed.
Great for
yes.
blood sugar control. Olive leaf has many uses.
It helps to relax the endothelium, which is the muscles that controls the tone of blood vessels. So that would be a plausible way to use olive leaf extract. Yeah.
Yeah. Dennis has another question.
Okay.
This is very interesting. Do cortisone injections raise cortisol at all?
It's a good question. It's the cortisol and cortisone are different substances. They do the same thing, but cortisol is what your body produces naturally and cortisone is artificial. So typically when a person is taking cortisone, prednisone, nowadays, people take prednisone. Or cortisone injections can be given to the knee or to, athletes are getting them constantly. That's how they keep them on the playing field. What will happen is you'll see a reduction in your own cortisol production. In other words, there's a feedback. It's sort of like if you.
A negative feedback loop.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if you put a space heater into your room, when you have your thermostat on, the furnace will shut down because it's a feedback inhibition. You don't need to put in heat through your central air if you've got a space heater warming the room already. So that's the way
right.
that you suppress your own cortisol, and that can be a problem because too much of this outside prednisone or cortisone injections, or sometimes via inhaled steroids for asthma or nasal sprays that people use for sinusitis and allergies, you can get a feedback inhibition of your own cortisol, reduce your cortisol, and have kind of adrenal burnout or adrenal conk out.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm reminded of Afrin nasal spray.
Yeah, that's another.
And the rebound effect.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different thing. Sometimes when you stop these things that suppress inflammation, the inflammation comes roaring back and makes you think you really need to be on these things. And that's one of the disadvantages of steroids.
You know why I just remembered Afrin nasal spray? I remember being an undergrad, and this was in my anthropology course, that this particular professor, she used that Afrin, I think, in the hour and a half that we were in her classroom. She must have used it 28 times.
That must have been some lecture.
Wow.
Because that's, you know, that's like doing a line of Coke, because that stuff is so speedy. Really? Oh, my God.
She was on her toes, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I would love to get a transcript of that lecture and see if it made any sense whatsoever.
It was a long time ago. Anyway.
You probably your eyes were probably just wide open. You thought, wow, she is so eloquent. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Between blowing her nose and taking the spray, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Next question we have is from Arlene.
Yep.
I have trouble remembering words. Would coconut butter work for me? If so, what is the amount I should take every day? Wow. Well, that's a consult. At least with a neurologist for starters.
Right.
If you have trouble remembering words, I'm a little concerned.
Yeah. And, you know, look, there's so many different reasons for that. And that's why we differentiate. Actually, we saw a very interesting case the other day of a... It was a woman who was, she's in her 50s, and mm-hmm. she was diagnosed not just with Alzheimer's disease, but with a pervasive neurological disorder where it was Parkinson's-like, but she was experiencing a lot of memory and concentration problems and seemed to have some features of dementia. And her son brought her in because he's a big believer in the Brain book by Dr. Perlmutter. He was very impressed with it and said, you know, my family is not really that amenable to this idea, but I really like my mom evaluated for this. Well, lo and behold, she turns out to have celiac disease.
Wow.
So that's something that really needs to be evaluated. Celiac disease can negatively affect the brain. Thyroid problems can affect the brain. There can be inflammatory problems. There can be depression that, you know, makes you feel like you can't remember, but you just are lacking neurotransmitters, you have imbalances in your neurotransmitter production, and you just don't make the associations. Anxiety can rob you of memory, chronic anxiety. Lack of B12. And oh, by the way, the secondary problem this woman had was her B12 was in the basement, too. So you know, double trouble. So, you know, there's a whole workup for that. But let's give her the simple answer that she wants. She wants to know, how much coconut oil do you use for memory? And if you're going to use coconut oil...
And we don't know how old Arlene is.
Yeah.
So
the answer is, I'm hearing that the proper amount is about 5 tablespoons per day. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And we actually did an interview, very interesting interview, with, I think his... Trying to remember his first name. See, I'm having problems with memory. Bruce Fife.
Yes.
Thank you.
Take your coconut oil.
I was going to say Duncan Fife, but I knew it was Fife. But no, there is a Duncan Fife, but Bruce Fife. Yeah, I forgot to actually made my eggs this morning
with coconut
just,
oil.
No, I used olive oil, so maybe that's why I'm losing it. The choline in the eggs should have helped, but whatever his name is, Fife.
Yeah,
Bruce mm-hmm. has written a book on coconut oil, and also I think there's a woman who I've been trying to snag for an interview, who's a big proponent of coconut oil for memory. She's written a book as well on the use of coconut oil for staving off dementia.
And why does that work? Dr. Mary Newport. We know about Dr. Mary Newport.
Oh, that's the one. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yes.
Boy, your memory's really on fire today. How much coconut oil did you have today?
Coconut oil. I had my bulletproof tea this morning.
Wait a minute, folks. This is proof positive that coconut oil has amazing properties. Because you, as you can see, my brain is full of, it's like Swiss cheese today. And that's because I didn't get my coconut oil. And Layla's like all over it. She remembers every name and every, oh my goodness. Oh. No senior moments for you.
No. That remains to be seen. Anyway.
So what's the what's the reference for that book?
Here we go. Uh-oh. I don't remember the title of the book, so okay. I just proved you wrong, Dr. Hoffman.
No, but the
it
author
is
of the
Mary
book.
Newport. Yeah.
Mary Newport. Yeah, that
but
just it's N-E-W-P-O-R-T. Okay, go
ahead.
Yeah,
we know the website. The website is coconutketones.com.
Oh, beautiful.
Coconutketones.com. And even if you Google Dr. Mary Newport, you will find it'll come up.
Great. Let's get her on the program because I'd like to have a discussion with her.
That would be wonderful.
Okay,
that
good.
That would be wonderful.
And this is a convenient reminder to me that this is the inflection point of today's broadcast. Let's log this as part one of today's Q&A with Layla, and we'll return with more of our discussion in just a moment, including a discussion of natural therapies for acne. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.